Get ready, it's time for the podcast.
Welcome back to the Candy Colored Studio. I'm artist Katrina Berg. This is episode 160. It's been a minute. It's been a hot minute. I don't know about you, but summer got so crazy. I had to give something up. And so we had to take a little break, but we're back. I'm back doing the podcast. So it's good. So as for like an update of sorts in the studio, I just wanted to say thank you to everyone that came to my Swiss Days open house. It was so fun. It was so great to be with you. So many wonderful just moments, connections, thoughts, being able to share these latest pieces with you and welcome you into my home and studio. It was really special. So thank you for coming. If you wanted to see one of my originals in person before you purchased it, you can always just reach out and we can schedule a studio visit. So don't fear if you missed it. Just reach out to me and we'll make that happen. And of course, I will be adding things to, I'll be doing a shop update here pretty soon. I'm going to first offer some of the minis that were available during Swiss Days. I'm going to offer them to my email list first. So if you're not on my email list, go ahead and go on my website, katrinaberg.com, and then you can sign up for my email newsletter and you'll be the first one to hear about that. And then I will add some things to my website. No idea when it's going to happen, but that's the goal. other things that are happening, this is the last week of the Rouge Utah Women's Voices art exhibit at Sears Museum in St. George. And that's at the DSU, it's right on DSU campus. It's their art museum. It's a fantastic, fantastic exhibit. This particular show highlights basically just the need to have, you know, options for women to exhibit and the realization that there really is not a great representation for women all through the world, nationally, and unfortunately in our very own state of Utah. So the whole show is just from Utah women and their beautiful pieces, so many great stories and experiences shared through their work. So I think if you get a chance, you should definitely check it out. It's the second installation of this show. The first one happened last summer up in Bountiful. The curator is my dear friend, Nancy Andruck Olson. And I'm sure there will be more. So there were more women in this show. There was obviously more artwork. So it was really special because the space was quite a bit bigger. So who knows what the next one will look like, but that was really awesome. So again, that will be available till Friday. I think it closes on Friday, the 17th. And what else? We've also got Certain Women. This is their third exhibit that they've done, and it's going to be awesome. I've seen a lot of the work already, and some, again, that more work than they've ever had in the show, more women participating. This is particularly for LDS women, Latter-day Saint women, members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. And the theme this year is about Heavenly Mother, which is extra special. So the pieces are just exquisite that I've seen. It's going to be awesome. So if you want to go to the opening for Certain Women, that will be at Anthony's Fine Art in downtown Salt Lake. It opens September 30th. It's the last Thursday of the month, 6 p.m. And again, if you're on my email list, I'll be sending out more information. So feel free to keep an eye out for that. And I will have to do a special episode just about my piece in that show. I was so excited about that piece. So I'll do an episode just on Certain Women, and that will be really exciting. So that's what's coming up. That's really all I have coming up locally. And then in the studio, I'm working on a new series, a new French series. You know, I love to do paintings based on anything French. using French songs and French memories and French landmarks, all the things. So I finished the first piece, and then I'm started working on the second one. The first one is an Eiffel Tower. The second one is a map. It's a larger map track. I've been doing little mini map tracks for La Petite Maison Antique in Draper, and this one is much larger. It's a 16 by 20, and it's got a good part of just a really great part of Paris. Lots of your favorite places are all included. So it's been really fun to work on so far. Okay, so that's pretty much it for a studio update. Let's jump into this topic. So I wanted to talk about with school getting back in session, I've been thinking a lot about homework, learning, all kinds of things when it comes to that. And so the title is Where Homework, Mustard Seeds, and Seeking Truth Collide. So that's kind of what we'll be discussing today. And there's so many great things that I've thought about. In fact, I've kind of, since I haven't done a podcast in a while, I have gone through so many parts of these ideas many, many times. And who knows if we'll cover all the things that have kind of been running through my mind, but maybe I'll do a second episode. We'll see. But I just wanted to start by telling you that I have this love-hate relationship with homework. I think growing up, I thought homework was great, but as a parent, sometimes it's hard because sometimes it's real easy to think that they're just doing busy work at home. And sometimes I'm like, oh my gosh, if they haven't figured out how to do this at school in all those hours, like, have they actually learned this concept? And why is it not like, why do they have to do more when they get home to get to the point where it's interfering with family time or their personal pursuit time or just bringing tears? There were so many nights I stayed up so late doing homework in high school and going to early morning seminary and being, on swim and water polo teams and being the high school mascot. There was just not a lot of sleep involved. So there are times when don't get me wrong, my high school was great and it really prepared me for college. Like, college was fairly easy because we had to work so hard in high school. But for these little people, sometimes I feel like we're just doing busy work, right? And I think the reason why it bothers me is because I feel like sometimes it doesn't matter how many worksheets we do. Is it really getting into our soul? Is it becoming real knowledge, or is it something else? Because if it's not real and tangible, then I think the best possible outcome from a lot of it is just this ability to regurgitate the information and then hopefully receive a good grade on a test or an essay. And that just kind of feels like we're missing the mark and we're defeating the whole purpose, right? So I guess one of my questions for us to consider today is, how do we make it real and tangible? How do we make knowledge and truth, homework, just anything we're learning become real and tangible? So just so you don't think that I completely hate all things regular school, I don't know if you're aware, but I actually, my first degree is in early childhood education. And so I actually learned a lot about how children learn. What are some of the best ways to teach them? What are the best ways for them to just for it to become real and tangible? And of course, we looked at all kinds of theories and practices, and just like we tried all the things, and then we went ahead and we tried them in the classroom, right? And so one of my favorite theories that I learned during school is this idea of multiple intelligences, this idea that we learn different ways and that not everyone learns the same way. And that sometimes, different times of our life, we lean on different intelligences to understand and to utilize this knowledge in our life. So there's some great books out there about this theory, but I'll attach like just a simple blog, basically an article that talks about the theory. And one of the things that people believe is that there are 17 different ways that you can learn and 17 intelligences, but I'll just list seven. Obviously, different people have different categories how they do it, but here's one that I found that they talked about during school, and that I think that it really covers most of them. And of course, you can kind of divide some of them up to make more. But anyways, let's go over seven. So the first one would be like visual intelligence. So obviously, I would definitely, I use a lot of visual intelligence. I like to communicate visually. It seems like those people that are skilled with visual intelligence, they love maps. They like images. They prefer to see things. And then a lot of times you get those people that have like photographic memory. All these things all come with this visual intelligence. Also, like spatial knowledge and spatial awareness. All these things happen with visual intelligence. The second one is kinesthetic. So people that are really aware and able to do things just physically with their body, it's really easy for them to move. Some of my kids are like really good kinesthetically, and others are obviously my twins, for example. They're super different. Like one of them loves our big twin. He just loves sports. He loves being physically active. And his brother likes to be active physically, but he's not as I don't know, technical. He's a detailed person, but I think the technical aspect comes easier for our bigger twin. But our smaller twin, like he was the one that first learned how to go up the stairs. And when he did it, he was like, "Oh, that was great. I'm never gonna do that again." He didn't do it again for months, but he was super little. I think it was right after he started crawling. So he was really, really little to be going up the stairs by himself. But once he did it and he got to the top, he just had no desire to do it for a long time. So again, he's very detail oriented, but the other one, he'll just do it over and over and over until he just, yeah. And so I would say that our smaller twin, he's very into visual. He really, that's a strong thing for him. Okay. Let's go to the third one. So, auditory or musical intelligence. So, obviously, people that learn really well auditorily. Like, I remember our middle child, he's our number three, and he could hear everything in the house. He could tell you what somebody needed. He can pass along information to his siblings if they didn't hear us or whatever. Like he was so funny. He was like a little broken record. He would repeat everything that we would say. And so he's very good auditorily, which was great because he's the one that struggles with dyslexia. And so I feel like that was really his strong point that's kind of helped him work through some of those difficulties. So obviously some people learn better with music or through music. And so that can be a really great way for people to learn and to hold on to knowledge. The next one would be linguistics. So obviously there's some people that are just really great with speaking, writing, all those things. They're just verbally meant to, that's just really how they excel. Then I would say logical. So a logical intelligence would be someone who's really good with math. They're really good at keeping things organized. They love models. They like to find common ground with lots of ideas. And they're really good at deducing information. Okay. So I would say the fifth one is interpersonal intelligence. So people who work really well as a team, they do better as a team. They understand each other. They communicate better when they're in groups. They also love being social, right? This is definitely our oldest. He's so funny. But they tend to do better if they can collaborate with other people rather than just doing it by themselves. Okay, so that's the interpersonal, but then the intrapersonal would be people who are able to understand things when they have alone time, right? This is definitely me. They do better when they're able to tap into their own emotions and then they're able to manage themselves. They need to have that time to explore and research on their own, intrapersonal, okay? And then the last one is the naturalist intelligence. And so these people find they just really do better when they're able to be in they're in like an outdoor environment. They love animals, they love to work with nature. They find that their lives are just better if they are able to touch and feel and interact with nature on a regular basis. And they also are able to just understand and hold on to that knowledge easier if they learn it in more of a, naturalistic environment. So, okay, so that's kind of the theory of multiple intelligences. So for me, I just kind of felt like that was a huge aha moment because I knew intuitively that we didn't all learn the same. Like, I don't know about you, but in high school, I mean, I was taking these honors classes, and there were some kids that just seemed to only need to hear something once, and then they were really good at doing well on tests and essays and all these things. And then there were some of us that I had to work harder. That was me. I had to work harder. I worked really hard for all of my grades. And don't get me wrong, that's a good thing. It's a good thing to work for things. But I knew that some things came easier for some people than others. And it's pretty clear when we watch professional sports that some people clearly know how to move their bodies better than others. And some people know how to use logic better than others. This is just part of life. So I guess for me, how to make it real and tangible. Like, I think it's really important to know who you are and how you learn best, and then that will help you as you try to do better on your learning journey to gather knowledge and to find out what's true. So going back to homework, kids and homework. So I think it's important to know ourselves. It's important to try to understand our kids better and to teach them to recognize their strengths and the ways that they can best hold on to knowledge and then also just utilize knowledge and then make it real, right? So, one of my very favorite talks, you probably hear me talk about it a lot, but I love this idea of good, better, best, comes from a talk in 2007 by Dallin H. Oakes. And I'll link to it in the show notes. If you've never heard of it, it's great. And I think about this a lot. I think about how there are good things in life, there are better things, and then there are best things, right? And so I would say when it comes to kids and doing homework, for me personally, I think it's good to help them with their homework and make sure they're doing it. But I think it's better to let them do it themselves and be there in case they need it. But then I think it's best, and sometimes this has to do with age, to allow them to learn, to struggle, and then when they need help, to make time to help them. And I noticed as my kids have gotten older with tweens and teenagers, I can't always be there every time they need me or need something. And so I love that sometimes, I love when they come home and tell me, I didn't know how to do this, but this is how I figured it out. And this is how I was able to do that. And I think that is so powerful. So when it comes to homework or just learning in general, there is good. I mean, sometimes it does have to do with our developmental stage, with kids, the littlest ones. We really want to be there with them, hands-on, as much as possible. But then as they get older, it's really important to like let go and let them do it because otherwise they're going to have to learn how to let go and do it themselves later in life. And sometimes that's even harder. I keep thinking about this favorite history teacher. Okay, so I'm talking about high school. So junior year, we were studying US history and he was awesome. I don't remember his name, but I can see his face because obviously visual. I can even hear his voice and see his mannerisms. He had a great delivery. He was very excited, very enthusiastic. But in all of that, I can't tell you anything specific that I learned from him. I just know that I really appreciated the things that he taught us that year. Now, what are some things that he did that I thought were great? Well, first of all, he had great delivery. I already mentioned that. And then I would record everything that I thought was important, any of the key points I would record in my notes. And then that for me was that kinesthetic. Like if I would write things, it would help me remember things, right? The other thing that I would do kinesthetically while he was talking is even when he wasn't like telling me dates or specific names that I needed to record, I would be doodling in all the margins. Again, this is where my visual and kinesthetic come together. And when I was doing that, I found that I could retain more of what he was saying. So that was great. But then I learned that even better. So again, I think these are good. This is the good part. Like he was a really, really great teacher. Okay. But I would say that for me to better understand US history, it came as then I went and did my own study. So I read, historical accounts or historical fiction novels or watch historical movies, even if it's fictional. I think that when I was reading and seeking to watch them personally, I was like, I was taking my responsibility to seek out more knowledge. I feel like I was getting more out of it. I was understanding more about what happened in those time periods. But then I would say that an even better understanding developed as I heard first person accounts. Okay. But then I think the best or true knowledge came as I listened to all these different sources and then asked and received confirmation of the events or the knowledge through my heart, aka the Holy Ghost. So I feel like we can't always receive first person accounts of history, of science, all these things. We can't always get a tactile experience. Like I can't get a tactile experience with atoms because they're so small, right? So we need to have something that's going to trump them all or going to cover all of the things every single time. And that would be, for me, my heart and listening, discerning through the spirit. I knew that that light within my heart was truly the most sure thing that I could feel and that I could go to when it comes to knowledge. Okay. So personal learning. So this covers so many things, but over the years, and I have individual episodes about these if you want to dive into some of these topics, but I've wrestled with so many parts of life and knowledge here on my earthly experience. My sexual abuse taught me that not everyone has our best interest at heart and that I need to be careful who I trust. I also learned that Satan is real and that there is evil if we look for it. And there's even evil if we're not looking for it. It's there hidden and very pervasive. These are things that I learned. I also learned through my rare bone disease, it taught me that even the most knowledgeable in the medical field have questions. Sometimes they can even make terrible mistakes. And unfortunately, they don't always have our best interest at heart. Okay, another topic. 8 years attending multiple colleges, receiving multiple degrees, and then becoming a professional artist, LOL, taught me that while there are many wonderful ways to learn in college, our university system has room for improvement. It is not the only path, and it is not the best path for everyone. Again, these are very simplified versions of things that I've learned in my personal knowledge journey. Okay. Food allergies. Food allergies and autoimmune diseases taught me that real organic food is best for my personal health. It also gave me the courage to look elsewhere when it came to my health journey. We learned that we could safely deliver babies at home with a midwife, something that seems so crazy. And yet I read an article this week that they are shutting down. Like a particular hospital in upstate New York is not going to be delivering babies come the next couple weeks because they had so many people resign and they don't have the capacity to deliver babies. That's fascinating. So we learned it was doable. It was something that could be done safely at home with our midwives. I also learned that eating as clean and natural as possible was a huge determinant of our health, and it could minimize our trips to the doctor. We found ways to work around my personal health challenges, as well as all of our personal health challenges, because we have definitely passed some of these on to our kids. In my health journey and research, I realized that some building products and items in the home were better than others. So we researched all that we could and listened to our hearts as we were building our home. And now as we decide what to carefully bring into our home, right? So these are very, very broad topics. But then similarly and personally, I've been on quite a quest for truth when it comes to spiritual knowledge, as well as mindset, cultural and personal belief systems. And yes, we could add politics in there. It's been quite a journey, and I feel like there's still so far for me to go. And over the past 7 years, I have researched and pondered and prayed. Sometimes the discernment and confirmation of truth came easily, but other times it was very, very difficult and full of tear-stricken afternoons and evenings. There were moments of help from friends and family, but for the hardest of truth topics, I had to get dirty in a way. It was the hardest work, and I found myself completely relying on my heavenly parents, the Holy Ghost, my Savior Jesus Christ, and His atonement. I can honestly say that I've used Christ's atonement more in healing of thought and mindset, belief and perspective more these past 7 years than I thought would ever be possible or needed. The work over the first 5 years built the muscles that I needed, or at least, you know, rekindled those muscles. That's what I needed in order to face all the queries and questions that I would have these past 19 or so months. So I've been wanting to talk about this for a while, but in April at our church's general conference, so the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, we have a general conference every 6 months, and it's really great. We have 2 days full of talks and music and all kinds of great things to think about and just kind of give us a boost, give us more knowledge to ponder and give us things that we can work on, right? So in April, our president and prophet, President M. Nelson, gave a talk entitled, "Christ is Risen, Faith in Him Will Move Mountains." In his talk, he said, here's the quote, "Lazy learners and lax disciples will always struggle to muster even a particle of faith." Okay, so I have worked really hard this past year to stay off of social media as much as possible, to use it sparingly. As I went to respond to a direct message on Instagram, I noticed, I think it was just a story or something, somebody was very upset about this talk. And quickly, I could see that they weren't the only one. I could see that this was going to be the talk or quote that had many fired up that weekend and in the months and weeks to come. In fact, I could see why many were frustrated by this particular statement, but I could also see clearly what he was trying to teach us. For context, let's take a closer look at what he said before and after. So I'm going to read that one statement one more time. "Lazy learners and lax disciples will always struggle to muster even a particle of faith." So this is what he says before. He talks about in the Book of Mormon, Alma talks about experimenting on the word. Okay, so I'm just gonna quote President Nelson. Alma asks us to simply, he asks us simply to experiment upon the word and, quote, exercise a particle of faith, yea, even if we can no more than desire to believe, end quote. The phrase particle of faith reminds me of the Lord's biblical promise that if we have faith as a grain of mustard seed, we shall be able to say unto this mountain, remove hence to yonder place, and it shall remove, and nothing shall be impossible to us. Okay, so let's look at that a little bit. So basically, this is a really big part of the Book of Mormon. If you haven't read the Book of Mormon and you want to know what it's about, go to the Book of Alma, learn about experimenting upon the word, learn about seeds, just planting. He talks about this idea of planting this seed of a thought, or this tiny seed of faith, okay? And it's just a particle of faith. It's just a piece of faith, okay? And then he talks about how that tiny particle of faith can then be able to grow into this idea where you could tell a mountain to move, right? Okay, so let's keep going on. I'm gonna keep reading what he said. He said, "The Lord understands our mortal weakness. We all falter at times, but He also knows of our great potential. The mustard seed starts small, but grows into a tree large enough for birds to nest in its branches. The mustard seed represents a small but growing faith. The Lord does not require perfect faith for us to have access to His perfect power, but He does ask us to believe." Then he goes on to say, "My dear brothers and sisters, my call to you this Easter morning is to start today to increase your faith. Through your faith, Jesus Christ will increase your ability to move the mountains in your life, even though your personal challenges may loom as large as Mount Everest." Okay, I'm going to interject here. Most of us feel like we have been facing challenges as large as Mount Everest. I think we all were facing challenges before the pandemic, but if you don't look at the pandemic as a Mount Everest, like you're definitely just in the very small minority, because I think it has affected so many people. And even if it's not affecting you personally, it affects people that you love. And so I feel like this has truly become a Mount Everest for our time, for our culture, for our whole human family. Okay, going back to the talk. I'm going to keep reading what he said. He says, "Your mountains may be loneliness, doubt, illness, or other personal problems. Your mountains will vary, and yet the answer to each of your challenges is to increase your faith. I'm going to read that one more time. "Your mountains will vary, and yet the answer to each of your challenges is to increase your faith. That takes work. Lazy learners and lax disciples will always struggle to muster even a particle of faith. Okay. Then he goes on and he says, to do anything well requires effort. Becoming a true disciple of Jesus Christ is no exception. Increase your faith and trust in him takes effort. May I offer five suggestions to help you develop that faith and trust? Okay, here are the five suggestions, and then I will link to the talk so you can go back and reread, or you can read it for the first time. The first one he suggests is to study. The second one is to believe. The third is to act. The fourth is to partake. And the fifth is to ask. And I think this is interesting. I love the order that he did this. So I'm going to say it again. Study, believe, act, partake, and ask. And I'm not necessarily saying that he believes that you have to do it in that order, but for some reason he felt it was important to put ask at the end. And I think that's so fascinating because I think for me, a lot of times I start with a question. I take that little seed and I start studying. And it's like I ask a question, then I start studying, and through that study, I come up with a seed, right? This thought, this feeling, this belief, okay? And then I use that belief and I act, and I go ahead and plant the seed, and then hopefully I partake, like I see what fruit or what plant comes from that seed. Well, I think it's interesting that he put ask at the end. I don't know what that means, but we can all just kind of ponder about that. So again, what was his last suggestion? It was to ask. One of the most common topics in our home right now is the importance of asking questions. We are asking like there is no end in sight. We don't have all the answers, but there are so many discussions happening because of this. We're constantly exercising our critical thinking skills and muscles. We are taking nothing at face value. You would think that all of this questioning would result in a home full of chaos, but surprisingly, instead, we are finding so much more strength as we exert our faith daily. The depression and fear of the unknown has subsided because we ask questions and then we talk about ways that we can research that subject or where we can go. We discuss it together. We encourage the kids to go seek it out on their own. You know, I mean, perfect example, those five things that President Nelson talked about. So, instead of having the depression and fear take over, instead, now we are seeing it. We see those things more clearly, but we fully acknowledge that fear, the depression. Then we open the door and we tell it to exit promptly. My good friend Michaela would say, I see this little, like she calls it an ant. She says, I see the ant. And I see, she used the example of seeing Satan. She says, I see you, Satan. I see what you're doing. Now I'm going to open this door and I'm going to ask you to go out the door. But that's how I feel about fear. That's how I feel about fear, depression. I would say evil and Satan as well. We need to we acknowledge it clearly. We see it for what it is. We ask ourselves, why are we seeing this? What is this telling us? What do we need to learn from this? And then we open the door and we ask it to leave. I heard this awesome explanation like that you can use fear as an acronym. So fear stands for false evidence appearing real. I'm going to say that again. Fear, F-E-A-R, false evidence appearing real. Okay. In all honesty, there have been so many moments over the past 19 months where the knowledge and truth that I was finding was absolutely scary. I mean, so scary, like shook me to the core. Took me several days, sometimes months to get over. I shouldn't say get over, but to process some of the things that I was learning about life, about this culture that I've grown up in, about this, just everything, right? We could go into this a lot deeper, but my heart told me that it was true and that I shouldn't fear. And we know that fear is not of God. We know, at least I know, that I want to choose God over fear. And yes, in our home, we are terribly imperfect humans, but we're choosing God and we're seeking truth by the Holy Spirit. So Where does that leave us? I don't know. So many things have been happening. I mean, I could say there are days when I have said, I need to find my own Amish reality. Now, I said this to a friend and she said, are you going to start making your own furniture? I said, probably not. I'll probably pay people to do that. However, I feel like the Amish have taken themselves out of like typical reality. Like they've taken themselves out of the narrative, maybe. They've taken themselves out of typical society. And they said, this is the way we want to live. Well, that's kind of where I'm at right now. It's not just being an artist. Like I think that spiritually I realized that I wanted to do less shows so I could spend more time with my family. I wanted to do less shows so that I could process the things that I was finding. I wanted to spend more time just creating in my studio and not worrying about what other people think about my work. I don't put a lot of it out on social media. I need to be better about sharing it with my email list, but there's not a lot of it that you're seeing, and I'm okay with that. And so I'm kind of pulling away from the narrative, from typical society, whether it's in my art career, whether it's personally, whether it's spiritually, just within our home. And I feel like we have the opportunity in our home to continue to ask questions, to have these really hard discussions, to do our research, to seek to have discernment through the Spirit, to find out what's true. And then when we find out what's true, I need to take all that and create the life that I really want to live. My Amish-ish, Amish-ish life. I want to create the life that I want to live in. I want to create the experience that I want to live in. So when somebody is saying that I need to live life a certain way, I know that I'm a sovereign daughter of my heavenly parents. I'm sovereign. I don't need to follow things in a world that I don't want to be a part of. So I don't know where this is going to lead, but this is the direction where I'm going. And I'm just going to keep working on planting the mustard seed. I'm going to work on researching and finding tangible, real truth so that I can then create the world that I want to live in, the world that I want for my children. I want them to live in a world where they can seek truth, where they can speak truth, and not be fearful of, being hurt in some way, whether it's figurative or literal, you know. And we're going to make mistakes and we're going to find things and then later we're going to find more things, and that's okay. But I feel like all of these things, this life experience is like one great homework lesson. We chose to come to this human experience so that we could be away from our heavenly parents and try it for ourselves, to make it real, to take these ideas, these feelings that we had before we came here, and to try them to see what we could do to make it tangible, to plant those seeds and see what happens. That's what it's all about. So, I don't know about you, but I think that I'm going to say the word precipice. I think we're on a precipice. I think we are seeing that there are parts of our life that we're not sure if we should trust anymore. We're not sure if we should trust certain supposed people that we thought had our best interest at heart, but we're realizing they may not. So where does that lead us? I'm not sure. I think there are more questions to be asked, more truth to seek out. And again, I think we're on the precipice of deciding what we want to make out of this human experience. So what do I have for you today? I want to send so much love because I know you have questions. I know I'm not the only one with questions. I want to send you love and strength. I want you to know that I am thinking of you, that I'm praying for you, that you will be able to discern between truth and lies. There are so many lies out there right now, and it's starting to come out. It's starting to come out. I will be honest. I've had to look really hard. It's not easily found, but I think it will be made known. I think some of the lies will be revealed slowly, and I just want you to know that I'm thinking about you, that I'm praying that you will feel that strength within your heart, that you will know in your heart that your heavenly parents and that your Savior Jesus Christ love you so much, and that they have so much confidence in you, and that they know that you will find joy and happiness as you seek out the truth. It's going to be hard. There's going to be hard moments for all of us, right? I just have to keep focusing on that light at the end of the tunnel instead of the tunnel. Because when I look at the sides of the tunnel, it's dark and it's scary. And I don't know where that door leads to. I have no idea. But I have to focus on the light at the end of the tunnel. So again, I'm sending so much love to you today. May you find joy in the idea that at some point there is peace and comfort coming, that it is coming. And I give you the courage. I pray that you'll have the courage that you need to go after the truth. Let's do it together. I know that we can do it together. I know that we have Christ's atonement to support us as we seek for this truth. And I know that the Holy Ghost will bless us and help us find what we're looking for, the answers, the way forward, the individual journey that we are seeking out. I know that it will come. Again, sending so much love to you today from the Candy Cone Studio.